go on the normal radio. Free weed. Free weed. Oh, yo. Danny Danko come to show you how it grows.
You're now tuned in to Free Weed from Danny Danko on Normal Radio, presented by High Times Magazine. See me, I say, boom, bang. Big respect. See me, I say, Danny Danko.
All right. Yes, welcome to High Times Presents Free Weed from Danny Danko, episode number 43. And thank you, as always, to Jacques and Windstrong for the tune. Check them out on SoundCloud.
Yes, do all of those things. Welcome to episode 43. Say this every week or every fortnight, but I can't believe we've made it this far.
Yeah, 43 shows celebrating. We're in our third year, I guess, of making
feels
shows.
Like our 12th.
And yeah, this one is a panel that we did in Seattle. So we're going to recap
yet another live Free Weed. We had a great time doing those listener questions on the last episode.
Mm-hmm.
But as Dan mentioned, this was a live Free Weed that we did at the first Seattle U.S. Cannabis Cup.
Yes.
And yeah, tell them who is on the panel.
Oh, it's a cavalcade of cannabis all-stars. Kay from Trichome Technologies, who we've had on the show. Drew West, author of Secrets of the West Coast Masters, and also a several-time participant on our podcast.
Yeah, oddly, all of these panel members were on Free Weed at some point.
Have, of course, absolutely. So Drew West, Kyle Cushman, our friend who actually ended up winning the Cannabis Cup with the Strawberry Cough. Which we'll talk about, and Swerve from the Cali Connection Seed Company, also appearing on that panel, and a legend, DJ Short, who created the Blueberry Strain, the Flow Strain, the Old Time Moonshine, basically a legendary breeder of seeds and a great grower as well. So
it was a good mix. You had the old school with DJ and Kay, and then you had some of the newer guys like Drew West. So it was a great panel.
Absolutely.
And we're gonna bring that to you in a little bit. But first, what do you say we just kind of go over some of the highlights from Seattle?
Oh man, this was a blast. We had a great time. The musical guests, Red Man and Slightly Stupid at the WAMU Theater, which was just cavernous arena.
Gigantic, yeah. 7,200-seat arena. And,
yeah, with a really fun backstage area as well.
Yeah, and it was weird because it was right in between Safeco Field, which is where the Mariners play, mm-hmm. and then Century Link Field, which is where the Seahawks play, and we were right in between those two things, so that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, and shouts to Redman and Slightly Stupid. They had great performances. Carl Denson playing with the Slightly Stupid guys, and yeah, it was just a great show. But that was just the VIP party that Saturday night. Beyond that, we had the expo again at the Fremont Studios, but we expanded that a bit, and it definitely had a bigger kind of celebratory air than the last one we did there, since the law changed and everything. So yeah, I mean, we're expecting even bigger and better things from Seattle next year, too.
Yeah, we went to Fremont Studios again. We added 30,000 square feet of space. So we had about 5,000 people attend.
Yeah, and you could recreate. I mean, that's the thing.
Recreate.
You had a medicating area for patients with, dispensaries there, and there was a recreating area as well. So,
well, technically, there weren't separate areas, which was interesting. It was sort of just everyone was in it together,
mm-hmm.
and you could recreate, you could medicate. If it was open to all adults over the age of 21. There is a little designated smoking area where mm-hmm. We were in compliance with the law. So it was a great time. And of course, on Sunday night, we had the award ceremony where we honored Weed, and we also gave away a Lifetime Achievement Award.
Yes, to a great friend, Rick Steves, the travel writer, author, PBS host of a travel show. You've probably all seen him on television and maybe didn't know that he was a big supporter of marijuana law reform and actually, helped back the I-502 that helped to legalize in Washington. And so we honored him for basically his achievements in cannabis law reform. It's not something he has to do. He does it basically because it's something he believes in, and at some risk to his career, And yet he really hasn't suffered a risk. In fact, I asked him, you know, he said every once in a while I get a letter from someone who's angry about my cannabis outspokenness. And basically, you know, I tell them I'm happy not to have them on my tour because it's not going to be as fun of a tour with a person like that traveling with me. So I thought that was really refreshing. And yeah, man, we got him up on stage. He made a great speech about how high is a place. And that's why as a travel writer, it's a place that he likes to go and it's a place we should all be allowed to go. And I thought that was a really interesting take on, why we should legalize and why we should continue this fight so that, you know, it gets through all the states and all the countries of the world.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was a cool moment. Vivian McPeak, who of course is the Seattle Hemp Fest founder and won the Dr. Lester Grinspoon Lifetime Achievement Award last year in Seattle, introduced Rick Steves, mm-hmm. and he gave a really interesting acceptance speech. I really enjoyed it a lot. And of course, he wasn't the only entity honored at that show. We, of course, gave away the prizes for the best pot, hash, and edibles.
Yeah. We're not going to get into everything that won and all, but we definitely got to send shout out to Buds and Roses, who took the second U.S. hash cup, U.S. cannabis cup. Last time it was the veganic Girl Scout cookies, and this time the veganic strawberry cough. Kyle Cushman, Tyler, Aaron, all those guys that make Buds and Roses tick in Los Angeles are definitely like stepping up the game as far as what people are bringing to the table for these contests. It's pretty amazing.
It is indeed. And of course, White Walker OG.
Yeah, that was in the U.S. hash category, and that was a fantastic entry from people who, you know, really were unheard of from us, basically, besides maybe Instagram, and managed to put themselves on the map with a hash win in a very, very tough category.
Yeah, that, of course, is Gold Coast Extracts. And, you know, the U.S. hash is open to both solvent and non-solvent hash. Mm-hmm. And that, of course, is a solvent hash. But
right.
Did you try that one?
I did.
What'd
you think? That one was the one that disappeared the quickest. And
it's usually a good indicator.
Yeah. And people want to take a look at pictures, really high-quality photos of all the entries. You can take a look. I think the winners have their THC percentages on there. And we have the gallery online at hightimes.com.
Yeah, check that out. Every winner and the lab results for the THC and CBD, that's up on hightimes.com. So go check that out. And, you know, Seattle was a wonderful event, but we have another really great event coming up in November.
Yeah. It's the Amsterdam Cannabis Cup, the 26th annual. And people were wondering, you know, will High Times be back in Amsterdam? And, you know, the answer is a resounding yes. And people also might wonder, well, you know, you're doing these cups in the U.S. Why should I bother going all the way overseas? And my answer to that is quite simple. The situation over there with the coffee shops and the way you can order off a menu, be treated like a customer instead of a criminal, it's very unique. The coffee shop system itself is just a wonderful thing to participate in. And, you know, you get your exotic hash over there, too. You know, everything isn't about dabbing this and dabbing that. You can also experience the terroir that's inherent in something like a Moroccan double O hash, like soft hash from Morocco or from, blonde Lebanese. Or, you know, there's just all that stuff that we don't really get a bunch of over here, but they have on the menu over there. And I think that's, along with the museums and the wonderful, you know, culture of Holland, it's one of those experiences that's unique to that place. And yeah, we've already got Killer Mike and LP hip hop artists booked. We're trying to book some other people that are pretty big names in the entertainment world. It's a 4-day event. And, I highly urge you, if you can, to get over there. At least if you've never been, definitely get over there. And
isn't it 5 days? Sunday through Thursday?
Right. 4 nights, 5 days. So yeah, actually it's a 5-day event.
You just got an extra day there. That's nice. Yeah, no.
And you know, it's a lot better than spending Thanksgiving with your drunk uncle.
Right. Yeah. Especially your drunk uncle.
Yeah, particularly.
It's a great city. And as Dan said, there's just something about going into a coffee shop and looking at a menu and selecting some nice pot to smoke there. It's a great experience. So if you haven't done that, you ought to come over to Amsterdam for the 26th Cup.
And I can get you 10% off your tickets if you go to cannabiscup.com and click through. You can use promo code DANKO, D-A-N-K-O, for 10% off. It's almost $30 off the ticket to get you into that event. I'll be there. We'll be doing live free weeds over there. We're going to have tons of entertainment. So it's a fun time, and I hope you guys can make it over to Amsterdam for Cannabis Cup. I'll probably be doing a seminar every day, if not at least 4 days of that event, I believe. So
at the risk of just being too much Danko, I think we're gonna do that. We'll have live
well, we did it last year. We ended up getting that episode with Simon from Serious Seeds, which is a nice, very, you know, very heavy duty episode of our podcast. So yeah, we're gonna record at least a few of them over there, and so that'll be a lot of fun. And yeah, use that code DANKO at cannabiscup.com for 10% off your Amsterdam 26th annual Cannabis Cup tickets.
Yes, do that now. You want to get ahead of that, start planning. It's coming up faster than you think. So use that promo code DANKO. And now, without further ado, let's listen to the panel from Seattle. Now, I know that this is probably a deterrent for at least 3 people out there, but I was not able to participate in this live free weed. I had to go set up the concert that we spoke about, the Red Man and Slightly Stupid show, but I understand that Dan did a wonderful job.
Yeah, no, it was a really good one. I felt like the information flowed out of everybody, and we really, you know, we got some interesting stuff out of DJ Short and Swerve and Kyle Cushman, Drew West, Kay from Trichome. He was on both panels Saturday and Sunday. So yeah, without any further ado, let's play that panel, and we'll be back afterwards to wrap it up with Raw.
Thanks a lot. Thank you, Seattle. You guys are amazing. Really having a great time here. I've been hearing a little bit here and there from people, you know, about this sort of conspiracy thing that Monsanto or RJ Reynolds or all these companies are going to take over our industry with all this money. And we don't need them. They need us. So it's basically up to you guys now. If you can grow your own, you have no reason to turn to companies like that for products that are questionable. And that's why we're here talking about growing. I'd like to introduce the panel. To my right, this is Kay from Trichome Technologies. They've been the greatest grow rooms in High Times many times, and you know, he's a consultant that works in the industry of cannabis production, and that includes concentrate production and grow rooms that are you know, the size of this room rather than the size of a bedroom or a closet. So we're going to talk about that with him. So thank you very much, Kay from Trichome. To his right, Drew West is the author of Secrets of the West Coast Grow Masters, and you know, a grow expert here in the Pacific Northwest, specifically dealing with a lot of outdoor grows and how to get the most out of your plants using trellising techniques and things like that that we're going to talk with him about. So thank you very much, Drew. To his right, High Times alumnus and Cannabis Cup winner multiple times, Mr. Kyle Cushman. Also, he's going to talk about veganic growing and Vega Matrix and all kinds of really interesting things you can do beyond even organic growing, where you can really just have very perfectly burning pot, which is how you win Cannabis Cups. Besides just having good genetics, you have to grow the plants properly and flush them properly. So we're going to talk about that with him. So thank you, Kyle.
Thank you.
Yeah. I actually owe my job at High Times to Kyle, so thank you again.
I used to say the same thing about
Pot Okay. To Kyle's right is the founder and breeder for the Cali Connection. It is Swerve, multiple cup winner as well. Incredible seed, vast knowledge, and incredible seed breeder, and multiple cup winner as well. And also the sponsor of the party tonight, the homegrown party, is a Cali Connection party with Red Man and Slightly Stupid and Carl Denson and Marlon Asher. It's going to be a fun time tonight, so I hope I see you guys all at the WAMU Center tonight for the party with our friend Redman and our friends from Slightly Stupid. And so thank you, Swerve. Thanks for sponsoring that. All right. And to his right, a legendary cannabis breeder, the creator of Blueberry, something you guys have probably heard of, Flow, Old Time Moonshine, and a ton of really stable, really incredible and unique genetics, DJ Short. So that's the panel for today. We're going to do this again tomorrow with a different panel at 3 o'clock, but let's get into growing. Let's specifically talk with Kenny, because we're in a state now. Colorado and Washington have very recently basically gotten the green light from the federal government in some ways to grow big. And so I want to ask Kenny in particular, what are some of the differences that you get, that you encounter when you go from, let's say, a bedroom or, you know, a 4 to 8 light system to a huge kind of warehouse system?
The answer is everything. Everything changes exponentially from the air in, from the water filtration, from the way you handle the facility, as far as, your number one priority is not to get this thing infected with any kind of pest disease. So the genetics that come in have to be super clean. So, you know, when you've got millions of dollars invested, I mean, everything heightens. So, yeah, water sterilization, air sterilization. And just the methodologies have to be as efficient as possible, because as Colorado learned, the cost of production is really, really in the end the number one thing that's going to make your business successful, is just, you know, top quality with cost of production is paramount. If you don't adhere to those two things from the beginning, if you do them by default, in the end, as the market slips and the prices drop, I mean, $100 an ounce in Colorado is hard to survive on in a large scale facility. So you've got to make that thing very, very efficient. And that's pretty much the biggest thing, is just safety, prevention, and efficiency.
Now, why aren't people considering maybe a greenhouse type of environment? Would that reduce the cost of production for every gram that you produce? Is that, you can go ahead.
Absolutely. In Israel, we produce 250 pounds to 350 pounds per month for 50 cents a gram, utilizing the sun and supplemental lighting. And we can run 4 to 5 crops per year. In the colder months, we get a little bit lower yield and stuff like that, but, you know, it's all calculable. But yeah, so the lowest cost of production is definitely the future, is definitely in a greenhouse.
Cool. Drew, I want to ask you, because specifically the medical laws here in Washington allow people to grow, I believe, 15 plants each. Now, how would they get the most out of each plant? What's the proper technique to yield big?
Well, what we teach, what I wrote about in the book, Secrets of the West Coast Masters, is all about training the plants. It's more so than how you feed them or anything else, but how you train them. And actually, what you want to do is maintain a level canopy and get that canopy as low and as wide as possible, never allowing a certain branch to overcome the others. Basically the reason that is because the plant's sensitive to gravity, and it can tell which branch is higher. So it's going to send the most growth hormone to that branch, and that's going to be your big cola at the top of your plant that you always have, and then the buds below that are always a little bit smaller. When you train the plant out, you know, horizontally rather, and you get, you know, multiple tops, every one of them can be symmetric and look exactly the same, provided one's not higher than the others. So to do that, you know, you want to build a little structure around the plant we call scrog, and then use a trellis net to kind of, you know, train the plant into, use it to spread the branches out so everything gets an equal amount of light, and then you also use it to add extra support to the plant. You know, so basically the idea to get the most out of the least number of plants is to train them out with a premeditated, you know, outcome. You want to know exactly what it looks like, get them to do that, you know, get that down, and then you can get anywhere between 1 to 2 pounds per plant indoors under 1,000-watt light that way.
And that requires a longer vegetative cycle as well, though. So you, rather than switching to 12-12 on and off with your lighting early, you wait a month, maybe 5 weeks, Right. And then you trigger the flowering period.
Yeah, typically 6 weeks. And I mean, everything, it's going to be dependent on the strain more than anything. You know, we suggest to use a good hybrid 50-50, 60-40, like sativa dominant hybrid that's going to give you a little bit more branching, a little bit faster veg time. But, you know, if you're working with one bud room and one veg room, you've always got 2 months to veg. You know, at least, because that's how long it takes to pull, you know, for your other stuff to harvest. So you always have that time. The veg time isn't much of a consideration. Typically, I tell people 6 weeks for a good, you know, for a good sativa dominant, and about, you know, 7 to 8 weeks for just like a strong indica, like Kush plant or something, you know. But you have to remember that they always double, sometimes triple in size once you throw them into bud. So
that's
it's
the
all
stretching
about,
period, right?
It's all about developing the structure, like the symmetrical mathematic structure that's going to give you a predictable outcome, you know?
And that's the size of your container is pretty important, too.
It matters a lot, you know? You need, you know, right now we're running 15s, you know, for
15
the indoor,
gallon.
Yeah, for the indoors, you know, and that's pretty good. If it's a longer strain, like a sativa, like a haze or something, that's going to be in there longer, put it in a little bit bigger pot because it needs more time for the roots, you know. And that, you know, that dictates, you know, the strain can dictate the size, but also, you know, the, like, bud mass is tantamount to dried root mass, right. You know. So you want to give as much room for roots to grow as possible when you're dealing with these bigger plants, for sure, you know.
So for your perspective purposes of a five-gallon Home Depot bucket, that's a five-gallon bucket. He's talking about three times that size indoors. So 15-gallon containers are very large. They allow the roots to form a large root system, which is the only way that you're going to get a big yield from every plant.
Right.
Come on, aren't you going to mention your old story? More roots, more fruits?
More root, more fruit.
We want to hear it.
That's Gross Bliss, actually. But yeah, Kyle, I want to talk to you a bit about, I guess, we'll talk about veganics and what that means, how that's different from organics, and also why does it make the end product better?
You know, I got to admit, I was really surprised myself in the beginning being an organic grower for over 20 years. And I thought I had reached my pinnacle, you know. And then I found veganics, or veganics found me. And again, I thought it was just me being biased. But after you start sharing it with everybody and everybody has the same reaction, that it's just, it's better and it's cleaner.
And what that means is there's no animal product. So things such as bat guano, which is basically poop, and blood meal and bone meal, those are products that you get from a slaughterhouse. They're still organic, right? I mean, they're considered organic. They're OMRI certified. Well, but they're meat-derived products, and they have a more complex biological structure, I would think. So veganics is using things like kelp, you know, seaweed,
Chilean nitrate, plant extracts, fermented and homogenized plant extracts,
oxygenated compost tea, I would imagine.
Exactly. It's a long subject. It's not, I guess I'm not really that good at encapsulating it all in one thing, but the main points are a lot of organic fertilizers or amendments take more time to fully break down than you're going to have in that one crop cycle anyways. So you end up putting stuff in the soil that doesn't end up getting fully metabolized, nor does it become fully decomposed. Veganic nutrients are nearly 100% bioavailable from the moment that you introduce them to the soil. So the plants don't have to work as hard to get at the food, and when they're done metabolizing the food, there's very little residue left. When you're done metabolizing all the nutrition out of things like bone meal and blood meal and things like that, and especially guanos and feces, you have garbage left over, you know? It's kind of like minus poop. It's poop minus something, but it's still poop. And it's in your bucket, and it's ultimately going to affect the finishing pH of your soil. And it's mingling in with your roots that are now getting 2 and 3 months old. And it makes it, it's a little bit easier for your plants to continue photosynthesizing in a cleaner environment, in a veganic cultivation environment.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I want to talk a little bit about the importance of genetics, and I'm going to ask Swerve in particular, being a breeder, being able to take certain strains that people consider, you know, clone only, a lot of the Kushes and things that he's been able to bring to the market as a seed rather than something that you could only get if you had a friend who had a mother plant and a clone. So let's talk about a little bit about just the importance of great genetics when you're growing and how that makes a big difference.
Genetics are keen. That's obviously the first thing to worry about. I guess it's the old fable, you can't get gold from pyrite. So that's one thing that you always have to keep in mind. If you've ever had a strain that you deemed mediocre, and you've run it and run it and run it and dialed it in, and it's still the same, obviously it's the genetic that's the issue. It's not the actual grower. So maybe you consider to move on to something new, and you grow and you find something better. You know, genetic diversity, in my opinion, right now is kind of at its, I'd say, wit's end, because there's so many bastardized versions of everything, myself included. I mean, I'll throw myself under the bus on that. I don't really mind, but you know, that's the issue that I'm seeing now is more. You got 500 OGs, you got 500 Kushes, you got 500 this, you got, you know, there's really what, three Super Silver Hazes, maybe one original haze if you're lucky to find that. Aside from that, you know, genetic diversity now is all Kush, Kush, Kush. It's a Kush driven market, in my opinion, and that's because it's a faster flower and it has the hit, the punch that everybody's looking for that medicates you quite well. So, I mean, I think right now, if you were to be smart, you would do your best to get multiple strains in your garden and start dialing in and learning multiple genetics at the same time, not the same genetic. Don't dial just one in and keep that as your cash crop or your baby. I would suggest to branch out a little bit, spread out a little bit, because you know what? That's what this plant likes to do. It likes to spread out and gain up room. Give yourself a little bit more of a balance, you know, indica sativa hybrid.
I just want to suggest, though, that if you are starting, just starting out, you should probably stick to, I don't know if you mentioned, just stick to one, start off with one strain and branch out after you get a little familiarity. It can be really hard to actually dial in a room if you're growing for the first time with four strains that you've never grown before, because you don't know who to pay attention to, you know?
Not all strains want to eat the same thing. You mix up a formula that one likes, you know, you feed it to all four of them and it's their first time doing it. Now you've just thrown like an infinite amount of variables into what could go wrong with your harvest at the end. You know, if two or three of them don't turn out, two of them are real good and you have no idea, you know, if you don't spend the individual time with individual strains to learn what they like. You know, they just can't assume they're all going to want the same thing.
Yeah, most strains will grow within a certain parameter, within a certain NPK ratio. They're all pretty much close. It has a lot to do with slight diversions in nitrogen, slight diversions in the phosphorus, and mostly when you ramp up and ramp down the nutrients because they have different flowering times. So, you know, unless you're into making four different nutrient buckets of nutrient solution, then which would be very, very good way to learn. It's good to start off with just one or two strains of either indica or sativa.
But even with Veganics, you would say that it's important to flush the nutrients out for the last week to 2 weeks with plain water. I mean, that goes for
sure,
organic,
absolutely,
chemical nutrient,
absolutely,
rock wool, soilless mix, pretty much anything, yeah?
Absolutely. The plants, they have an ability to store certain nutrients for hard times, should it be dry or things like that. And it's always good to give yourself at least 10 to 14 days, even with Veganics, of just plain water. They really clean and flush out. You can continue to give the enzyme formula into just leave 1 week. I like to use the enzymes almost to the very end and give them good 1 week with just plain water.
And I can't emphasize enough, it's one of the most important variables when you're judging strains. A lot of times it's the same, you know, like you said, Kush, 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 whatever it might be, it's the same strain entered by three different growers. And at that point, you're not judging the strain, you're judging the grower and how cleanly pot burns, and that's a direct factor based on how well flushed it is. And a lot of times harvest time creeps up on you. Suddenly you look through your microscope and it's time and you haven't had a chance to flush, but you really have to think back 2 weeks prior to that and plan to start that flushing process and just use plain water during that time.
So you just illustrated why you must have a grow calendar.
Calendar is
important.
You
have to have a grow calendar.
Notes and calendar is something I don't see enough growers do, and it's very important. You want to know what day you planted, what day every single thing occurred, so that's important.
Exactly. So it's all about keeping records and refining those variables. Each strain, each genetic wants to, a different thing at different time, not only food, but pH.
Yeah.
You know.
Absolutely.
Very good point.
I want to ask DJ Short a little bit about the selection process when you're breeding, let's say, a strain like blueberry. What's that process like as a breeder to get something to market?
Well, for me, you have to understand I was very lucky. The things that came to me, the Landrace varieties, the Highland Thai, the Highland Oaxacan, the Chocolate Thai, and the Afghan. Those being the P1s, the first parental generation. Crossing the Afghan with the sativa, very dissimilar phenotypes. I mean, just as dissimilar as they can get, produce the F1 seeds, which is the first filial generation, and they're all uniform. They're kind of something in between all of them. I liken them to Lebanese plants, medium height, long spear-shaped buds. And in my F1s, the full cacophony of, you know, it's like you spilled paint in a candy factory and just new carpeting and all kinds of things going on. Then in the F2s is where I saw the diversity begin to happen. So for using blueberry as an example, I would find a very berry-leaning male, very berry-leaning female, cross those. If I did it right, when I grow them out in the F3, I should be seeing 25 to 50% of that in the progeny. If I do, then I continue that on, and in the F3s, I'll pick another very berry-leaning female, very berry-leaning male, and harden that down to the F4s, which then ideally should be coming in at 50%. The seeds I release are F5s, pretty much guarantee 50%, but you should see 75% of the progeny exhibiting the desired trait. So it's just selection. A big part of it, too, I think, is Luther Burbank, his rule, select the best and reject all others. And the hard part, especially when you're spending $100, $200 a pack for seeds, is rejecting the others. But it's a discipline that you need to do. Some of the, you wouldn't think this, but over time I've learned that the fastest, biggest growing plants, I just call out automatically because they're producing fiber, I found. So also, first to sex generally get culled out because early flowering, in my opinion, isn't indicative to good experience in the end run.
I want to quote Aaron from DNA from our panel in Denver. You have to learn to kill plants.
Yeah, you have to kill a lot of plants. And that's a learned discipline for sure.
Hey, you guys. As always, Free Weed is brought to you by BC Northern Lights. Now, what do? They make a premier grow box, several different options, also with touchscreen controls, all kinds of state-of-the-art stuff. Everything's automated, everything is simple, and you can have Free Weed yourself at home with these grow boxes. They've got deals for Free Weed listeners too, so if you mention the show, you mention Danny Danko, you mention Free Weed, you mention Mike Hughes.
They charge you more if you
mention Mike charge you more if you mention Mike Hughes, so yeah. Don't do that. But mention the show and you will get $100 off shipping, some free nutrients for 6 months, all kinds of deals that they have. BCNorthernLights.com and BC Northern Lights at 888-236-1266. Toll free. Get yourself a grow box and some seeds and you'll never have to buy pot again.
Call them.
I also want to ask you about something we've been talking about, slightly controversial subject, this 13 and 11 flowering cycle. Sure. Can you explain a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, first of all, I got this information from old timers in the mid 80s. And these were old timers that were like wrapping their own ballasts, you know. these were old timers, and they told me no, a little bit longer on the dark side. What I dialed that down to was 11 hours on, 13 off. I know you're accustomed to the 12-12 in flower, but by doing the 11 on, 13 off, in essence, what happens, you will see phenotypic expressions in the end that you will not see with the 12-12. And I think that's part of also what helped me find a lot of these diverse things. Now, there's very few strains. There are a few out there that I'm sure are accustomed to the 12-12, but they're not that many. Now, what happens is plants take in nutrient during the daylight hours, and remember, a plant's main source of food is light, okay, not additives, it's the light. And so by giving them just a little bit longer dark period, the other side of that coin is the plants put that nutrient into fiber during the dark period, so they'll stretch a little more at night. You'll actually increase production, cut your electricity costs back by 1/12 at least, but I swear by it in terms of finding special things in the end that otherwise would not present themselves. It's a phenotypic reaction. We have genotype and phenotype, and a real quick little lesson on that would be a cold temperature purpling. In order for a plant to turn purple in cold temperatures, it has to have that in its genotype. And genotype is just the genetic makeup. Phenotype are the expressions we're seeing that the environment is coaxing. And there's a lot of work we can do with our indoor environment. Different frequencies of light. I prefer the the blue-leaning highlights for flowering. It just brings out a lot more flavor, I think, than the sodiums do. So that's what we're looking to do.
For the whole cycle?
Yes.
You prefer the blue halides for flowering?
Well, no, more towards the end. Oh. Definitely towards the end. And back the lights off towards the end because light breaks down the cannabinoids.
So how many weeks of at the end of the flowering cycle do you like to change over to the blues?
I have a blue in there all the time, basically, so I haven't really done that experiment to see pulling them in. But I did notice, you know, touring a lot of gardens in Europe when it was all sodiums, right? Everything in Europe was sodiums, and you'll notice the sodium lights, in my opinion, tend to bring out that kind of sour, bitter, citrus, lime, piney flavors that tend to dominate. Whereas if you want these subtle, sweet aromas, you really got to, you know, play with the light, back them off. That and the three-day dark period before harvest.
About a 60-40 mix of metal halide to sodium halide is what
sure,
I prefer.
Sure, sure. Any
it's
blues,
absolutely fantastic.
Any blues you're getting in there.
Any blues, and they're also killing some of the powdery mildew spores or any of that other stuff. So
you
natural
said 60-40 halide to sodium?
60-40 sodium halide to metal
sodium
halide.
Sodium to halide.
Yeah, getting
60-40
any
metal
blue in there.
40%.
Through the full cycle?
Full cycle.
Are you talking within the same hood, like one of those hoods that offers a halide bulb and a sodium bulb in the same reflector, or are you staggering them from, you know, halide to sodium, or how are you configuring that exactly?
It's a checkerboard, I think.
Yeah, right? Checkerboard, yeah. Stagger them. But it's proven by the theory that the Hortolux bulb that you're talking about does have a 46 mix, and it's a great, great theory, but the bulb doesn't really work that well.
I meant like the reflectors that you actually run off of.
Oh, with a dual
there's
bulb.
There's like a 400-watt halide and then like a 600-watt high-pressure sodium in the same.
Yeah, that's a theory on that. That's
they
fantastic.
They have those mixed spectrum.
Exactly, or they have it in one bulb.
I want to ask Swerve, you're a seed breeder. What's your preferred or recommended method for people to germinate their seeds?
Oh, okay. I got a pretty foolproof method. Everybody goes the typical paper towel route.
Wet paper towel. With the seed in the middle.
And you have the, just put it in the soil, make sure, you know. Problem with the paper towel method that I have is too many people cook their seeds because they try to make it in a warm area and then they put it on top of their cable box and completely forget about it, and they come back to mush, and then they're like, well, what happened? But my foolproof method that I personally use, and this is how I germ test basically every seed that I ever put out, well, not those seeds, but from the packs, is just a glass of water, distilled water, regular pH distilled water. I don't do anything with it, no temperature, as long as it's room temperature.
What pH?
Literally, you can use distilled pure, so it's 6.0, 7.0.
I've never bothered to pH my
stuff. I've never pH'd it. That's why I asked.
Yeah. I'm horrible. If you really want my honest opinion, I just get a glass of water that I, you know, we didn't finish, that was basically going to be for the, you know, pieces, or just a quick little out of the sink and just fill half a cup up, and I throw hundreds of seeds in. Literally, just throw them into the water. They float, they sink, and they sprout. They usually germinate. Some germinate on top of the water, some germinate down at the bottom of the water, but that's my method. And the longer you leave it in the water, the longer the taproot usually tends to grow. Now, cold water, not good. Hot water, not good.
What's the ideal, like 75, 78?
Tepid water.
Yeah, tepid room temperature. Just room temperature water. Nothing, and, you know, crazy. Just
now, how long, once it cracks open and the, you know, the taproot starts coming out, how long do you wait before you put that into?
I usually go to about a quarter inch taproot, sometimes maybe an eighth inch, sometimes, you know, a little bit longer, depending. Sometimes the seeds are like, yo, I want to go into soil, or I want to go into my medium because I have a taproot this long and I'm already shedding my seed husk, so it's time to actually plant me. You know, but most of the time, they're so fast that, you know, you have no choice but to actually plant them, because they're like, okay, let's grow here. We're moving, we're working. You need to catch up.
I just recently had a little. I was challenged to see. I told one of my partners that once the taproot gets too long, that there's a good chance that it won't sprout. Because so I always used to pick the ones that had the nice hardy little quarter inch straight taproot, and that was the ones. And the ones on the plate that had shed the shell and were getting all fuzzy and stuff, I'm like, those will never sprout. 100%. I was amazed. I took every one of them, put them in the ground. They all wanted to live. And so you never know. You can't tell just by which one cracked out of the shell first which is going to be the best seed. So if you've got yourself a pack of 10, you definitely want to make sure to put them all in the ground and at least give them that start. Select, you know, from that point on.
I actually prefer letting the tap get a little longer, about 2 inches longer. Indica in particular sometimes won't shed the shell or the little sheath over the cotyledon, and I found that to be the most foolproof method. Then what I like to do is take a beer cup, fill it maybe two-thirds with soil, wet it really nicely, aeration holes in the bottom, of course, drainage. Then I put a nice hole down, and I will bury that 2-inch, 2-3-inch taproot right up to the cotyledon in the soil. And as it grows and stretches, add more soil to the cup, and then you get stability and more roots.
That's great. I like that, because I find myself doing a lot of seed surgery. You know what I mean by seed surgery? You know, you put the best ones in the ground, and they start pushing up, and they're not popping off that shell. So you got to get in there and real carefully. You're not trying to snap the little baby's neck, and you try to crack off that shell, you know. I think I'm going to give a try of letting them get a little bit longer. It's easy to put a nice deep hole and just put it in there, nice and perpendicular, vertical. Yeah, good. That's a good tip.
Let's talk a little bit about the fimming method that you.
The fuck I miss technique.
Yeah, that technique and what that does. In terms of increasing yield and how it's accomplished?
Well, actually, it's not really called Bleep I Missed. Actually, FIM was the name, initials of the person who sent it in to me when it was a tip of the month when I was writing it back at High Times. And somebody just coined that phrase and it kind of caught on. But basically, when you go to top your plants, if you use a nice, clean, fresh pair of scissors or a razor blade and make a nice, clean cut, a clean vegetative cut, you'll end up just getting the two nodes on the side. The two branches that were already forming on the side of the main branch are going to be what's going to come out, and that's what forms the V. But it seems like if you get in there and kind of miss a little bit or mangle it a little bit, that's why I always use my nails, and I don't even have any nails, so I just kind of like mash it. And sometimes you'll get 2, 3, 4 tops growing out of the same place, and that's basically the FIM technique.
Cool.
Yeah, just try to mess it up. Don't try to do it neatly. Try to mess it up, and you'll get more tops.
And I was just reading on that also, influences polyploidy. And sometimes one of the branches will actually look a bit different. The old technique for doing this was colchicine. If you do a search on colchicine, it's a mutagen. And I'm relatively certain it was used on the chocolate tie and possibly the Highland tie that I've worked with. And that's why you see the variegation, the deformities, the albino splotching. These are all indicative of a colchicine regimen. Now, mainly colchicine is a medicine for gout, but if you do a Wikipedia on it and look down under botanical uses, it's used to inspire polyploidy and to just really mix up the genes and bring out things you wouldn't see otherwise.
The thing I hate about the polyploidy is you end up getting, sometimes you get those ones that get the flat stem, and it just ends up being nothing but pistils. There's no trichome. I mean, there's no calyxes. It's just pistils. Yeah.
Interesting. Kay, did you want to talk about a little bit about how to get larger yields from each plant? Is there any kind of technique that you can do in a larger warehouse type grow to get more out of each plant?
And mostly, it's just about the efficiency of your yield. You got to pretty much figure out, you know, what size, as Drew talks about, what methodology are you going to go? See a green, is that your most productive? Well, then you got more plants and more plants to take care of. So maybe you want a larger plant and a little bit less maintenance on each one. So first of all, you have to figure out what exactly your style and what your methodology is. You know, how much waste you want going out of this facility? Is it going to be soil-based, and are you going to get a sterile soil before you put it into a large-scale situation? And if you do put soil-based or organic methodologies into that facility, you'll never pass ISO standardization, say VetroCan or something like that. And maybe that's what the Canadian government's looking for, or, you know, the new emerging market and stuff like that is things that are a little bit more pest and disease free than just going ahead and putting predator mites and ladybugs and letting them fight it out. You know what I mean? So
is hydroponics the preferred method of large scale growing, like in Israel or Colorado?
It is. Well, in Israel, we're doing soil-based with greenhouses. But, you know, when I visit something like Howling Nurseries in Camarillo, California, I mean, they got a $50 million greenhouse, and they're going, hydroponic base. They've got a cocoa core 36-inch slab by, I think, 8-inch, 9-inch deep, and they just let the tomatoes grow 20 foot tall in, I think, a 9-month growing cycle, harvest repetitiously, cut those down, replace them with new plugs. So in a large sustainable greenhouse like that, and plus the environmental impact, you don't want to just have hundreds of thousands of tons of soil going in and out of this thing unnecessarily, right, without the ability to sterilize and really know you're safe.
Interesting.
I would like to say that especially, you know, like Drew said and like Kay said, a good pruning practice, a good pruning regimen, whether you're calling it super cropping or scrog, but employing some kind of a really good pruning regimen at the right time. That's another time when you have to be on point. You can't prune them up a week or two too late. You know, that's the thing that you have to get on. Will really make up for a lot of things. It's a real big yield increaser is a good pruning regimen.
For sure. Everything that you take off the bottom will always reappear back up at the top, especially if you're using this canopy style, you know. The other way to increase yield, like maybe not, well, even outdoor. I mean, we do outdoor. We have plants that are 8 foot by 8 foot frames with 2x4s that are 12 foot tall with 5 layers of scrog on it, you know, and these things will easily pull 10 pounds off each one, you know what I mean? And that's in a greenhouse 24x40, you know, we have, you know, several in there, but it's like the way to get the most yield is really the easiest thing you can do inside is use that horticrellis net. I mean, it serves so many purposes. It, like I said, it spreads it out, which allows the light to get in. It spreads the plants out and helps you maintain the canopy. But it also adds extra support. Like if you've ever had a branch break off the side of your plant, like it just goes and branch breaks, bud gets too big. Most of the time, the plant will turn off production before that happens as like a self-preservation move. You know, it's not gonna break its own arm if it can help it. You know, so when you're using this scrog net to add extra reinforcement to hold it up, it never tells itself to chill out. You know, it never tells itself to slow down, you're gonna break your arm. You know, they just keep going until it's ready to harvest. Yeah, and that's how you get.
Absolutely, it's like a plant that is supported will always grow faster than a plant that needs to be supported.
Right, and it's not stressed, so everything is just going into forming the crystals, which ultimately is the plant's life cycle. It makes the crystals, so it has a better chance of catching the pollen, has a better chance of having babies, and fulfilling its plant destiny, you know?
And then next, so now that you're concentrating all this time on making a good, even canopy and focusing on your budding sites, don't forget about your root zone, because ultimately, the size of the mass of the root zone determines actually, according along with the amount of surface area you have for leaf to collect the sunlight, true is that. Going to determine the ultimate potential for your plant if all the other parameters are right. So your root zone, pay attention to your pH and beneficial microbes and fungi, and pay attention to your root zone.
Cool.
You were going to ask that next,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And also, by eliminating all that lower material, you increase your airflow, which is a fantastic thing. You lessen your infection rate, everything else. So all that lower material needs to go. Like Drew said, it'll all reappear on the top.
We're talking about pruning lower branches that aren't going to reach the light anyway. And also important to note that you shouldn't prune tops within, let's say, a week or two of when you start flowering, or certainly never during flowering.
That's a good way to minimize your yield.
You have to give the plant, anytime you prune, you have to give the plant a chance to recover from the pruning and build more branches for the one that you pruned off, and then flower after that, because you will affect the ultimate yield if you prune right before you switch to 12-12 and start flowering.
And the plant's already going to be stressed out by the fact that you just switched its photocycle so drastically, you know what I mean? Like, kind of non sequitur, but making me think of that, you know, if you're using 24-hour light for your veg, you should probably knock it down to 18 hours of veg for at least a week or so before you throw it into the 12-12, a little bit more of a gradual, you know, because that first, if you stress it out in those first couple weeks of bud, then it just ruins everything. You know, everything else is just behind. You'll never get a full bud formation. It's just, that's the most crucial time. Yeah. So don't go cutting on it and doing all kinds of crazy stuff like Danny just said.
Yeah.
That's also why I've recently switched over to a 20-hour grow cycle instead of a 24-hour grow cycle. I find it, the plants just prefer it. They're a little bit happier, a little bit less stressed out.
You're talking about during the vegetative stage.
During the vegetative cycle.
So
and then switch straight from the 18 and 6 to 12 and 12, and you get a pretty nice pronounced bud set. Because the one thing you want to be wary of if you're going to go from 24 to 18 to 12 is that if you have a strain that likes to stretch, you could be encouraging that. So before it finishes its bud set, which is the time when the plant stops really growing and more of the energy is turned to making flowers, then you'd want to have the switchover directly from your vegetative flowering time, photo period, to your to your flowering for a time, because you're going to get a quicker bud set.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't recommend a 24-hour on anyway. I think DJ made the best argument, because the plant needs the dark time to do its actual fibrous growth. So even like you said, a 4 hours is enough, but 20 and 4, 18 and...
The reason why I adopted the 24 is because growing with so many of these super hybridized strains, a lot of them will begin to flower under only 6 hours of light. So you don't want to be messing with that. You're trying to get vegetative growth. So 20 and 4 seems to work really well.
The only times I'll use a 24 is in a regreen project to try and coax something back, and I'll only do it for 48, maybe 72 hours, and then drop back to a dark cycle.
You're talking about re-vegging a plant that's already flowered.
Correct.
All right. Okay.
Hey everybody, sorry to interrupt. This is Danny Danko and you are listening to Free Weed. I'd like to tell you a little bit about one of our sponsors.
It's Gorilla Seed Bank. These guys are in the UK. They carry a bunch of seeds. They ship worldwide. They've got Big Buddha, DNA Genetics, many of our guests that we've had on the show, Sensi Seeds even, Joint Doctor, Greenhouse Seeds. They carry all those seeds. They ship worldwide. They've got feminized autoflowering. If you're interested in that, they've got regular. They got them all, and we really appreciate their support. And they have a special deal actually going for Free Weed listeners. If you call them and you mention our show, you get a free 5-pack of Big Bang 2 from Feminized Seeds while supplies last. Now, that's with a purchase, of course. But if they run out, they said they're going to substitute a random 5-pack from the same brand. And basically, you know, that's five free seeds from them while supplies last if you mention our show. So check them out. Definitely support our sponsors, Gorilla Seed Bank on Twitter. Follow them on Twitter. Check them out there. They're on Facebook as facebook.com/gorillaseeds. You can go directly to their website and check them out at gorilla-cannabis-seeds.co.uk. And you can even call them 24 hours a day. Local call rates apply at 020-872-07323. Check them out. Thank you, Gorilla Seed Bank.
All right, I think maybe it's time to take some questions from the audience you guys. I'm going to see if you want to take the...
Hi, Jenna? I had a question about the 13 and 12, or sorry, 13 and 11. At the equator, we have the longest day of 13 hours, short day 11.
Correct.
Could you veg a sativa under 13 hours?
Yes, absolutely. And as a matter of fact, if you're doing an R&D project where you're looking specifically for, you know, sativa phenotypes, that would be my recommendation, would be your veg cycle then would be 13 on, 11 off, and then you switch to the 11 on, 13 off. And if you think about it, on the equator, that's what, a six-month period in between that very little amount of time? That's why sativa takes so long to finish. Farther north you go, the days get really long in the summer, but they shorten rapidly, and the plants need to finish quickly. But by all means, yeah, I'd be curious to do it. Something I look forward to doing at some point in the future.
As a personal grower in the Pacific Northwest, growing outdoors where you don't have environmental controls, mold, it controls everything. Harvest controlled by not when the bud's ready, but when mold starts setting in. What suggestions would you have to help us?
Light deprivation. We grow it. I live in Central Oregon, 4,800 feet above sea level. You know, it froze like a week ago, you know. But we have a sick greenhouse, and we're able to have that due to light depth. We have to veg indoors. You know, we get our plants about the size of that thing. And then we put them out in the greenhouse and we give them 2 months just like they were indoors. But you got to pull a tarp over it every night and close out all the light and control the photo period, 12 on, 12 off. If you do that, you're done in 2 months or whatever the time it takes, and you don't have to worry about so many of those other factors towards the end of it when it starts to get cold and more moist. You get to enjoy more of the summer weather, you know, and then still finish it up. That's the only way I've found it to be successful to do any type of large scale outdoor here in the Pacific Northwest. My area is more desert-like than it is here. You know, granted, it's a lot more moist in Washington and over in the valley side of the Cascades. But yeah, that's if I was setting somebody up, I would set them up with a greenhouse and teach them how to light dep, and that's kind of, I think, the way to do it around here.
And basically, it's light deprivation. You have a greenhouse. You can do it manually, like he said, where you're closing it and opening it. You can have it set on a timer so that it does it itself back and forth with a winch and that sort of thing.
The phrase you're looking for is forced flowering.
Forced flowering. And that way you're flowering earlier in the summer, and so you're avoiding some of the most
moist parts of the season.
And it's, the other advantage is if you're in a better climate than that, you can get more than one harvest outdoor in a year by doing that.
Right. You can get an early summer crop and then a later summer crop.
Some places even a third one.
And consider the east side of the state, too. It's a very well-kept secret in terms of growing. 300 days of sunshine a year.
It's not rainy everywhere. Right?
Yeah, Yakima Valley, around Walla Walla, Columbia Crest, up that away, some really, really good area. Anywhere the wine is.
Okay.
And some of the techniques I've looked at is getting some of the bigger and fuller indica buds and stuff, and just as you trim off the lower stuff, going and trimming off every other note at the top, because then you end up with a popcorn bud configuration instead of one huge top cola that possibly will get mold in the inner core and all that kind of stuff. And also working with BT to try, and early in the vegetative cycle, to try to keep the surface of the plant kind of inconducive to such growth.
Working with what?
With BT.
BT.
Yeah.
Questions?
My question is for DJ Short, and you were explaining the process in which you get to like an F5 and your selection. When you said that you were selecting off of your F5, the male and the female, from that F5, are you selfing those two together? And could you explain the process of what selfing means or cubing means? Give a little more explanation to
that. No, I don't do selfing. Selfing is where you take a female plant and encourage male pods and its own pollen to come and go. That's how feminized seeds are made. I do straightforward filial crosses. What specifically did you... Sorry.
What I'm curious about is the way you explained it. It sounded like you said that you were going to take the off the F5 generation, so you're going to just select a male and a female, and you're going to put those two together.
Correct.
So basically, it's an IBL. It's an inbred line completely.
Yes.
They're going back and back. So every generation, you're selecting from that generation. You don't put back to the same original mother.
Yeah, it's an inbred line, but it's by subjective means. Again, that berry flavor is the example I was using before. It could be anything, any flavor. Basically, my main goal is the effect of the finished product. I really don't care how the plant grows, what it looks like, tastes like, smells like. All those things are secondary considerations. If I get two things that do exactly the same thing in terms of effect of the finished product and one tastes better than the other one, of course I'll go for the one that tastes better. But it has to have that finished effect, the quality that I'm looking for.
And so the best method, you're saying, to get to the point where like you take 10 seeds and 75% are uniform in their genotype, mm-hmm. the best way is to go to an F5 and put two from the same...
Sure, or either that or just select a mother plant and then keep your mother plant going.
And that's what I thought. I would see that being as something more where you keep kind of the strength of your...
That's the most logical. And I released F5s for a reason, because there's a few more generations of that land race uniqueness left in them. I found when I get out to about the eighth generation, definitely by the 10th indoors, they acclimate to that environment.
Sure.
They lose most of what's unique. Now, you can pick one or two traits that you want to harden, and you can take that 100 generations, but it's just for the one or two traits. You try bringing any more variables into that, and it just turns into chaos.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
You're welcome.
This is a question for any of you. Have you found within a strain how to manipulate, say, the terpene profile by controlling growing conditions to any great degree? And is it predictable?
I recently read a report that correlates terpene manufacture with nutrient application. And the great Mel Frank is the one who turned me on to that piece of paper. So me and Mel Frank have kind of been going back and forth on, you know, nutrient application and high levels of this produce high levels of that. So I encourage you to look into it. There's a lot there, I think.
And light frequency as well.
Absolutely.
One more quick question to DJ Short on my part is, how, or actually both you and Swerve, how do you guys select for your males? How do you choose your males? What are some things that you guys...
Again, the biggest, fastest one gets cut out.
That's counterintuitive for most people, but I know it's interesting that you'd say that.
But in experience, like I said, big, fast-growing plants produce fiber, not so much resin. Hollow stems is another thing to look for. Flavors, smoke the male. Vaporizers are great for that, the volcano vaporizer, and you definitely want to recalibrate baseline state. You want to be as non-altered as possible when you're testing the males to pick up on the subtleties. There are some that are potent. There are some that have resin, and they pass that on. Potency is not the pinnacle for me. Other factors are involved.
You're looking for like a cerebral quality to the high...
Correct. It's hard to ascertain from the male, but again, if you're at a baseline state, you can kind of get an idea, especially for flavors, potency, those kinds of things. Those are more obvious than the subtle characteristics. And there really is no way to determine what a male does until you pollinate a female, harvest that seed, cure the seed, sprout it, and grow it out. There is no shortcut.
Sort. Choosing males?
I like really stout, solid, stinky males. I know that sounds so horrible to say.
Okay.
Say that again?
I like short, stout, stinky males. Reason why is because exactly like DJ here said, is those males that just, those plants that take off and they're literally a foot taller than everything else, it's exactly that, it's hemp. You're not even going to want to waste your time. I mean, you're more than welcome to, but as experience, we'll say get rid of it and run something that you're looking forward or for in particular. If you're looking for a more short male, if you're looking for something that has more branching in particular, I've noticed that the pungent aroma from a male will transpire into something that creates a heavy hit. I mean, I'm not going to say beat your plants up, but I'm not exactly the nicest individual to my plants. I abuse them and use them. You know what I mean? I'm gonna make sure that I get the smells and I get everything that I'm looking for from it. If I break it, I'm hoping that it's going to fix itself fast, and I'm looking for the growth from the bottom to shoot to the top, as opposed to just one that takes its time. When you're looking for males, I'm looking for something that's got that vigor, but I'm looking for something that's got the all-around stability package, not just I'm running off and I'm going to win the race, but I'm going to have the stamina, I'm going to have the capability, and I'm going to have the end result to win the race.
Nice.
So I don't know if anybody understands that or not, but...
On a side note, are you going to be giving away some stuff tonight at the homegrown party at the WAMU Center?
I always give stuff away. Hey, you know what? If it's not free, fuck it, right? But no, for real, the Washington Mutual or the WAMU Theater Center, whatever
it is. It's right between the two big stadiums there. And we've got Slightly Stupid and Redman, Carl Denson, Marlon Asher.
Awesome. I can't wait. And we got all types of free stuff to give away. You know us.
A bunch of free stuff to give away.
If you've ever seen our parties,
we
throw away the bank. We give it to everybody. You want the kitchen sink? Give us a moment. We'll get it for you. Just be careful and catch it safely.
All right. Any other questions, guys? Yeah. Malcolm? Dan Scott?
Okay. I have a question for you guys that work with genetics. What do you think we'll be smoking in 5 years, and what are you guys working on personally? Are we going to see more cookies, more tangy?
Hopefully we'll be smoking and not just dabbing.
Yeah.
Let's hear it for flowers and strains and joints and bong hits. I love a dab as much as the next guy, but strains are very important. Popping seeds is very important. Feminized seeds are easy to grow. Autoflowering seeds are easy to grow. But the only way you're going to find new genetics, and you guys can probably concur with this, is by popping seeds, regular seeds. For males and females, and that's the only place genetically where new varieties will ever come from. And we talked a little bit about mother plants and cloning, and that's an important skill to have. basically very easy if you factor in two very important variables, the heat and the humidity. And that's really, when you take a cutting of a plant, you cut a piece off of a mother plant that's in the vegetative stage, and you're inducing that cut end to produce roots and become a plant of its own. So it's the same as, you know, your grandmother would put, you know, ivy in a glass of water and roots will pop out. But when you're dealing with cannabis, it's a little tougher. You want to have a heat pad and a tray with a lid, clear lid on top that will keep the humidity in there. Room temperature is not enough to really induce roots. So you want to warm it up, and that makes you self-sufficient. That way you don't have to buy $100 packs of seeds every time you want to grow. You grow out a mother plant, you take cuttings from it to your heart's delight, as many as you want. So,
one little tip about taking cuttings, if I could. You can take the cut right from the plant, you know, as close to the main stock as possible. Take that, put it in a glass of water or something like that, and hold it until you're ready to actually put it in the rooting hormone, and then put it in your, like, whatever, your rock wool or whatever. But the very important thing I found is when you make your final, like, ultimate cut for the clone, submerge it in water, like the same distilled water, you know, you would use to do seeds with. Because when you make the cut, immediately the plant, like the way it feeds itself, there's a constant like suction from the bottom to the top. That's how it brings itself, you know, nutrients and stuff. So when you make the cut, it's going to suck in a bunch of air, which is going to immediately start to kill the cell wall inside of the branch. So if you make that cut underwater and then go directly into your rooting hormone, you'll have a way more success from what I've found. I don't know if you guys know.
I just want to address the gentleman back there that asked what we'd be smoking in 5 years from now. And my answer is a lot more legal weed. That's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah.
And I want to address all you young people out here a little, especially in that, you know, you're approaching a newfound freedom. And I can understand everybody being really excited and thankful for it. But I want to ask everybody to help preserve this new freedom that we have. I'm not asking everybody to be a role model and take on a big responsibility, but you know what? This is a new privilege that we've just been granted here, and I'd like everybody to respect it to some degree. Respect people around you who may not appreciate marijuana smoke and things like that, and let's help forward the federal legalization so that we can stop all this criminality and stop all the nonsense. And just further this movement. And I want everybody here to feel a little bit responsible for that.
Yeah, you're all ambassadors, yeah. Right?
I believe Roger Waters and the Pink Floyd said it best.
Sing it.
Together we stand, divided we fall. It's simple. Together we are the force, but divided we're nothing. We're useless.
Yeah, and a lot of times, like I said, to start this whole thing off, people have all these conspiracies about what's going to happen. None of that can happen if we're in charge. This is our industry. And when the big money people come in and they want it, they still need us. And they know nothing without us. So, you know,
see,
it's
important.
See, that's
why we need to set an example, because if we don't set an example for these people, then these big companies will come in and they will set the example. So we can't be the negative stories in the news every day giving the country a reason to follow these big corporations. We want to show them that we are in control of our culture and that we are responsible enough to bring this into the future.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not only that, but we built this industry.
Yeah,
you know?
Damn straight.
RJ Reynolds didn't build this industry. We've been risking our ass forever to do this, you know? We need to identify what our leverage is against them, and that's our knowledge of what good weed is. That's our knowledge of how to produce good weed. They don't know that. We know that. You know, we need to keep our leverage, and like what these guys are saying, be good ambassadors and never let weed turn into packs of weed at 7-Eleven. You know what I mean?
And the real key to that is to grow your own. They allow us to grow a certain amount of plants, get the most out of every plant, grow your own, share it with your friends. There's a reason I called my podcast Free Weed from Danny Danko. I mean, obviously, everybody loves free weed. But the idea is, it just like any other vegetable or flower in your garden, You grow it, you share it with your friends, you barter with your friends, and it takes all the cost and commodity out of it. It's pot for pennies when you grow it. So if you can't grow it and you have a friend that grows it and you make pickles, trade your pickles for their pot and, you know, keep the commerce, you know, out of it. It's not necessary.
Are you suggesting we trade pickles for a pot?
Yes. Yeah.
That's the next story in the January.
They both come in glass jars. They both come in glass jars. And, you know, pickles are good when you're stoned.
Hey there. I just wanted to interrupt for a moment to tell you about one of our sponsors.
And this is a great one. This is a vape pen sponsor called Power Pen. These guys have the most affordable pen I have found at $50. They come in black or white. You can check them out yourself at powerpen.com. It's actually power-pen, powerpen.com. They've got a great Instagram, which is powerpen. Look them up on Instagram to see lots of pictures of their stuff. These come in black and white. Like I said, they're $50, and they have a special deal for Free Weed listeners. If you put the code High Times, all capital letters, no spacing, High Times, use that promo code, you will get free shipping. So literally a $50 vape pen. Thank you very much to PowerPen, our new sponsor. So check them out on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and be sure to tell them that Free Weed sent you.
Any more questions? You guys, questions?
Mr. Danko, yep. Do you work for the Pickle Foundation?
Heady Pickles.
That's the real conspiracy.
Dance guy.
I just wanted to second your comment about growing from regular seeds, but at the same time, we need to talk to the breeders because all the newer strains are coming up feminized only. And we really need to get some...
Well, reject them and don't grow them.
It's really up to us as consumers. If people are lazy and they want to grow autoflowering feminized seeds, you know, it's really big in Europe because they just, you know, they want to plant a seed, they want to walk away, come back in 90 days and harvest. But, you know, this isn't a hobby that works that way. I mean, that's one way you can pull it off.
That's because Europe doesn't have the Mendocino National Forest, and it doesn't have Texas and all this extra land. So they don't have extra space. We have a little bit more space, and we have elbow room, and there's no need to grow feminized seeds and to mongoloid the whole gene pool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I would say there's a place for everything. There's a place for that. Some climates. You know, you need an autoflowering plant in the Yukon because you just don't have long enough to, you know, flower. Or if you're at a high altitude or that sort of thing. So there's a place for it. But the most important thing is the only way you're going to get new, unique genetics is from regular seeds and from growing them out and selecting the ones you like the best for their effects. Yes.
DJ Short talked about 3 days of darkness at the end of the cycle for budding. I had an old hippie friend that said that, but he couldn't remember why. So how about what's the benefits?
Sure. Light is what breaks down cannabinoids. The tests have been done to show THC levels were lowest when lights were going off. Right before the lights went off, they were highest right before the lights went on. Or right before the sun comes up, it's highest. So basically, if you can do the whole room, just darken it. I like to time it with watering. I grow in soil, so you know the cycle. You water the plant. They put their leaves up. They're all happy. And then as the water's going, they're getting thirsty. The leaves are coming down. So right about during that time, they're starting to come down. That's when I do the 3 days of darkness. And the shade leaves are already starting to get crunchy. It's curing on the plant, but the plant is still producing oils, and the light's not breaking down the oils or the terpenes. So that's the reason.
Light oxidizes, and terpenes and cannabinoids are photosensitive, and that's why GW Pharmaceuticals, after they harvest their plants, they're never exposed to regular light, only amber light.
It's one reason we say when you're storing cannabis, always store it in a cool, dark place, because light degrades THC. I guess that's it for the seminar today. We're going to do another one tomorrow with a whole different cast of characters. I want to thank my panel, Kay from Tricome Technologies, Drew West. Check out his book, Secrets of the West Coast Masters. The inimitable Kyle Cushman, Veganics, Cali Connection, Swerve from Cali Connection. Check out the party tonight for sure. And the legendary DJ Short. Thanks a lot, guys. Thank you guys, too. Thanks for coming. I hope you guys learned something.
All right. Hope you guys enjoyed that. We are back to wrap it up with Raw, which is what I always wrap it up with. And we taped another seminar there as well.
Did a free weed on Saturday and Sunday, so we have a second seminar.
Yeah, and I think Scott from Rare Dankness sat in on that, and that's that. We'll put that up at some point as well as another episode.
That one has our witty banter in it, at least
exactly, and it starts with the song and all that. So we should definitely
did some crowd work, I believe.
Some crowd work as well. Yeah,
I think singing to your water came up at some point. So look forward to that. That's coming up. And as we mentioned at the top of the show, look forward to Amsterdam, the 26th Cup. Dan has a promo code. Why don't you remind them what that is?
Oh, yeah. D-A-N-K-O. You write Danko in the promo code area, and you get 10% off your Amsterdam Cup tickets. So I hope you can join us over there. It's going to be a fun time. We've got the venue and the Melkweg for the nighttime parties and all kinds of interesting stuff going on. So it's going to be fun, and I hope you guys can join us.
Yes, and we will be doing free weeds from Amsterdam, as always, so that's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And again, go to hightimes.com. Check out some of that Seattle Cup stuff. There's some great video of the cup, and of course, the winner's gallery, where you can get a look at the top pot, hash, and edibles from Seattle.
Mm-hmm. I'm putting up different Amsterdam Cup memories up there on the website as well. So we did one with Kid Cudi, and appearing at our 2010 Cup, and I'm just going to be putting up some photos and some interesting memories of different Amsterdam Cannabis Cups, because some pretty epic things occur at every one. So
that's true. And while we're on that topic, you can go and see Dan's Dutch travel tips. Go to hightimes.com/Dutch travel tips, and that's Dan telling you the do's and don'ts of being in Holland. So that's exciting.
Yep.
You got anything else?
No, I think that's it. Episode number 43.
All right.
Is in the books. Put it in the books.
Done.